I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and my guests this morning to start the show, also Mr. Freddie Owens. How you doing, Mr. Owens?
Good morning.
You're going to really enjoy our conversation with him today. We're going to be discussing the Veteran Friendly Church Initiative today. Freddie is a veteran of I Drang in Vietnam, and we're going to discuss today how religious congregations can help serve the veterans in their congregations and how your church ministers can get trained to do that.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you that you've given us this day to remember. To remember the brave ones who have protected us. And Lord, we thank you for those who have given their lives for our country and for countries around the world. We ask for your loving protection over those who are overseas. We ask for your protection for those who have finished their service and are here amongst us. We thank you, Lord, that you have given us the brave souls who will fight for the rights of our country. We ask that you bless this presentation this morning and that you be here amongst us. In your name we pray. Amen.
On my way to do the show this morning, I stopped by to pick up some V8 juice. But when I did, I walked in, and the New Sentinel was sitting there in front of me, and it's the headlines on the paper today is another deployment, Freddie. And when I showed it to you, you already knew about it.
Yes, I did.
Well, what did you know about that?
About a couple of months ago, I got some information from some of my friends out there in Fort Hood, Texas, who told me about the 230s were going to be deployed. That was long before it was actually put in the news, and they'll be part of the 1st Cav unit, which is going to be deployed to Afghanistan for the duration in the drawdown that's going to be coming next year.
So these are going to be some of the last guys in.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a pretty special role.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty dangerous role, maybe.
It's a dangerous role. Yeah. You can't let your guard down.
Freddie, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started. Just, and I know you're a veteran. You were in Vietnam during the I Drang battle, but who is Freddie Owens?
Well, I'm just an average citizen who spent my time in the military. I spent 15 years in the military, part as an Army recruiter and as a military individual. What some individuals don't know about me is that I went into Berlin in 1961, when even before the wall even went up. I went in there that Sunday morning. So it wasn't just going into Vietnam. It's just my history just put me in different places.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, I served 15 years in the military. I spent 13 months in Vietnam in the I Drang Valley, wounded twice, Bronze Star, came back, and found out that I had some problems. And those problems surfaced, and I'm still in the process of working through those problems. It never goes away. Never goes away. You're
spending a lot of your time now trying to help other veterans solve those same problems.
That's correct. I work with a LPG support group, which is Vet-to-Vet USA, which is Vet-to-Vet Tennessee. We meet every Monday. We are about helping veterans. Whatever way we can help them, no matter whether it's the individual, the spouse, or members of the family, that's what we do.
Okay, when you say we and you describe Vet-to-Vet, now what is Vet-to-Vet?
Vet-to-Vet is a part of a national organization. Myself and Ed Janot, we became a part of it, and we're trained by Mo Armstrong and Ed Drew as facilitators. We facilitate groups. It's not a part of the veterans organization. It's not a part of VA. We are separate outside of that. We each one, reach one, teach one. That's our logo.
So you guys are a group of veterans who are acting independently of the Veteran Administration.
That's correct.
To help other veterans with all kinds of problems?
Our primary purpose is to try and get you back on your feet as far as benefits and other things that we can help you with.
And when you say on your feet, that doesn't mean you're necessarily helpless. It just means that there are certain issues that are associated to your experience in the military that you guys know how to make the connections.
Well, when we say help the veterans, what we do is we bring you in, we evaluate what your needs are. If that need means that you have to go through the VA, we walk you through that those steps and make it a whole lot easier than you just walking over and just looking them in the face, and we do things of that nature.
Okay. So those are the things we're going to be talking about today. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about different organizations, and especially something that's happened on May 1, that's Thursday, May 1st, 2014. that's sponsored by the Knoxville Regional Veterans Mental Health Council, and how to integrate the veterans into the churches and how the churches can help. And Freddie, during the Civil War, when a soldier came home and was acting funny, they said he had soldier's heart. When he came back from World War I and World War II, he had shell shock. Mm-hmm. General Patton got in trouble because he didn't understand what shell shock was. By the time the Korean and the Vietnam soldiers came home, they really didn't know it. And even in the book, We Were Soldiers, even the military really didn't have a system set up for identifying post-traumatic stress disorder or things like that. Did you get help when you came home, or did you even know you needed any guidance? Or I'm not sure help is the right word. I mean, did you need treatment, or did you need a wound to be cared for or recognized?
Those of us that came home from Vietnam, we were on the battlefield one day at, say, about 11 o'clock in the morning. And at 11 o'clock the next day, you was in San Diego. So you came from the battlefield to a plane. In less than 24 hours, you were placed back in the community. We had no idea what it was that we were up against. PTSD was a very vague term for me up until about, I'd say, 1983, 84, and I just stumbled upon it. It was really kind of unusual when you talked about during the Civil War, it was a soldier's heart. That's the name of my ministry, and that was one of the reasons why I went back and I had to research it. I said, wow, soldier's heart. I said, that's exactly what the ministry should be all about. And the World War II veterans, they had the opportunity of coming back together on about 30, 45-day boat ride, you know, in the unit, you know, together. The Korean veterans, they didn't have that opportunity. They were basically in the same boat as the Vietnam veterans, and they called it the Forgotten War, that wow. They, everyone wanted to forget about it. And I think that just lingered with the term from the Vietnam veterans that they just forgot about, that we were veterans. And when we came home to nothing but demonstrations. So we just had to feel our way around. And when the VA finally realized that there was a problem, and I can't think of the individual's name who was in President Clinton's staff, he suffered from PTSD. And he made it his issue trying to get the veterans their benefits, to include Agent Orange. And with that, the VA started to realize that there were actually really problems among the veterans who served in Vietnam.
You know, when you said that, it made me think back in the early 80s, I had a friend that I played a sport called paintball with that was a Vietnam veteran. And he was good. You know, back then, that sport changed, but it was a sport of stealth. And he was so good that, you know, I asked him, I said, why don't you come compete on our tournament team? We need you. One day we were in a tournament, and I came out at the end of the game, and I looked over and I looked at Ron, and I said, Ron, what's wrong? Ron was crying. I said, Ron, what's wrong? And he looked at me, and he said, you wouldn't understand. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, when I came home from Vietnam, he said, that morning I was in a rice paddy. 18 or 20 hours later, I was sitting in a bar in the United States, drunk, trying to deal with the fact of what I had been doing the day before versus what I was doing today. And he said, but the reason I'm upset today is because my feet are wet. And I said, you know, I didn't know. Why would that make you upset?
It does, because your feet being wet reminds you of walking through the rice paddies, of leaving with wet feet, wet socks, wet uniform.
And soldier's heart.
And soldier's heart. Yes. You know, so it's It goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it does. I was in a sales training class couple of weeks ago, and the sales trainer there talked about how people make decisions from their heart. Then once their heart says, I want something, then it goes to their brain, and their brain analyzes it. But the brain doesn't make the decision. They send it to the gut. And if the gut has doubt, if the gut says, let's go with it, then it's a solved problem. But if the gut has doubt, it sends it back to the brain. If the brain can't solve it, brain sends it back to the heart. Correlation. So veterans came home. The military didn't know how to deal with the families. The military didn't know how to deal with the soldiers that survived or the soldiers that came home. And that's where you found yourself.
That's where I found myself for a long time, for the 10 years that I spent in the military after that. You have a sort of a comfortability feeling, you know, when you're around those individuals that you have served in some capacity. But when you leave the military and you don't have that surroundings, you are out there on a limb. You're out there in the middle of an ocean all by yourself. You don't know exactly what's going on with you. And when you determine that there is something wrong, you don't know whether or not you have someone out there to speak with, someone who knows exactly what your problems are. And for me, it was my wife. And she said, you need to get some help. I said, I don't need any help. She said, oh, yes, you do. Because if you don't, we're not going to be around for a while. And that jump-started my treatment in the vet center. Not the VA system. Vet center and the VA are part of mm-hmm. the Veteran Administration. Mm-hmm. But the vet center was a storefront where most veterans went. They didn't put that information together that was sent to the VA, so it was an open-door policy. So you went in and you told them what your problems were, and they tried to treat it. And it took them 8 years to find a place for me to start in-house treatment. And from there, that's how I ended up learning about PTSD and being able to do some of the things that I do today.
I don't know if you want to answer this, but can you identify in one sentence what the problem was?
Depression. Okay. Anxiety.
Okay. From?
From battle.
From battle.
And it deals with what we call today the moral injury part of war. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had to deal with, the moral injury, which was individuals that I had known for a long, extended period of time before, during, and after battle. Mm-hmm. And that included the extended families of those individuals also. You can go any place and be a Christian, but if you don't know what the circumstances are, which for me was why send me back, you know, to a place that I have no friends. Because I lost roughly about 314 friends over a period of about 4 days. And that's tough.
It is tough. Wow.
It's tough. So I had to deal with that on top of why God, you know, why send me back to an empty place.
When I was young, and I had bags and bags and bags of Army men. And I would play with my Army men, but I never associated, when I would knock one down that he had been killed, I never associated his family or his friends or anything. He was just one that had to be knocked down. What you just said to me just goes all the way back to my childhood and puts connections there that never would have even been thought about. I guess it's because I could just pick him back up and stand him back up. I don't know.
That goes hand in hand with, it's just like my father. He served on the Arizona. Mm-hmm. And he was one of a few blacks that was on the Arizona. And he was a radio teletype. And he never talked about it. He never said one word until after he died. My mother, she had this great picture up on the wall, and I said, asked my mother, what was that? She said, that's the USS Arizona. I said, what does it have to do? She said, that's what your father was on. But she never told me that it was sank. I had started to read after I got into the military and found out that the Arizona was sunk, and he was blown off the ship into the water, and they picked him up out of the water. So he was one of those survivors from the Arizona. So
wow.
My family history is very, very deep as far as the military here in the United States. It goes all the way back to the Spanish-American War.
Wow. Okay, so you had to be threatened before you went and got help.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, but you didn't have a phone number to call or did you go to a doctor, or what did you do?
No phone number, no nothing. I just went to the vet center every week for counseling.
Who led you to the vet center?
My wife led me to the vet center. Okay. She physically took me to the vet center.
Okay, you so know. People that love you will seek out ways to help you.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Ron Coffin, he pulled me in, and he talked to me. From then on, there was a weekly session that we had up. In about five or six sessions, he told my wife, he said, it's time for us to get down to the brass and tacks. So she bowed out, and Ron and I would have those weekly sessions to get down to the base of the problem. And that's how I became part of the vet center.
We've got a little project going on for May 1st, 2014. It's going to be at the Knox County Community Action Committee Center on Western Avenue, 2247 Western Avenue. Well, we're going to use the show to explain how that works. I just want to read something to you. There's a why on why we are doing this. It says that veterans are five times more likely to contact a faith-based resource for help rather than the VA or other community sources, according to research. Veterans from Knox County have been impacted by their service and appreciate assistance dealing with these problems. Five times?
Five times, more likely. It's a confidentiality thing. I found out that these individuals are more comfortable speaking with someone of the clergy. Even myself, when I got ready to go back to Salem, Virginia for in-house treatment, I confided into my pastor, you know, that, hey, I'm going for treatment. These are some things that I'm going to have to take care of. And the first word out of his mouth was that we will take care of your family, you know, while you're gone. And for a pastor to say that, and it hadn't been said to me since 1965, and we're talking about 2002, that's what they call a monumental breakthrough of them taking care of my family while I'm seeking treatment. So that was really my turning point.
Decorated Vietnam veteran. Freddie, from what I know of you, you had to be brave enough to stand up and fight in Vietnam. Then you had to be brave enough to seek help years later. Now you're even brave enough to help other veterans find solutions to their problems by sharing yours and by teaching them what you know. You know, when we talk about why on this list I've got, you guys are all about helping their families cope with the absence during extended deployment in battle zones. Before the show, we were talking about how the World War II vet, you know, even during the show a little bit, about how he would leave and then come home, and then the Korean folks would leave and come home, and even the Vietnam guys would be gone for a year and come back. But in the Iraq and the Afghanistan deployments, they have multiple deployments, as even in the paper this morning. And how are those families coping?
They're probably in a much more unique position than the Vietnam veterans, even though a lot of the Vietnam veterans had multiple deployments. They can either volunteer or they would come back down on orders to go back over. But here you have individuals who are in reserve units who come back and they go back out in civilian life, as they may call it, and they start to work again. They may be working for 7 to 9 months, and all of a sudden they come back down on orders again, just like the 230th. They're back in a combat zone. The 230th was first deployed as a part of the 278th way back in 2002, 2003. Part of my ministry, we supported, you know, the families. So now they're being deployed again. So here we are with, I think this is their third deployment. So over a period of about 10 years. So that wears on the brain and it wears on the mind. So we don't know exactly where those individuals are. We don't know if their families really need help or not, but I'm pretty sure that they need help. The kids especially need help, because when you take the fathers and the spouses who are in the military nowadays, when you take them out of the family, you have that disjointed family. And so consequently, they're not getting the help, but we are here to help them any way we possibly can.
So some of them may say, oh my gosh, here we go again. We got to go through this all over again, the financial stress, the emotional stress, the separation, the missing the growing up of the children. You know, you might miss a whole phase between 7 and 8. You know, and then you got to recontact with your kids, unless you're in touch with them all the time.
Well, the thing about what really touched me the other day was this young lady there. I think she had 3 kids, and she went to the doctor a couple of days before that, and she found out that she's carrying another child. And he won't be here for the birth, anything. So all of those things mold into the family itself. So you've got a wife that's going to be here who's going to have to go through all of those things by herself with the other friends.
She's sick. She's, you know, wow, that's pretty powerful. But but then some of the other issues when they come home: post-traumatic stress, suicide prevention, family system adjustment stress, post-deployment employment.
All of those things goes into what we're trying to do in the community here. We're trying to address all of those issues. And when you address those issues, 99% of them start within the congregations that you're part of. And we determined that, especially in my church, that we needed a military ministry. And the military ministry helps the veterans to walk through all of these issues. I'm the layperson in my church. They may go and ask some of the other individuals in the church, where can they go? And they end up back here at me, because that's not the pastor's job. No, I'm the flock leader beyond what has the veterans have to do. So what we're attempting to do is to have the pastors to understand that we want them to identify the veterans in their congregation. And in identifying the veterans, we need an individual who is willing to step up and be the layperson who will help these veterans. It doesn't mean that you have to be a veteran, but you have to be able to understand what these veterans are talking about. We will go out and we will show them in our resource book exactly where they can and they cannot get help from. And that's our primary purpose, is to organize a military ministry that is a part of the congregation, and they become a part of a veteran-friendly congregation that can help the veterans, not hinder, help. You go right back to the original verse, the five times more likely to talk to a clergy, and that's your pastor. And when you talk to your pastor, he can send you to someone there in the church who is a part of our organization, how we train, that can help you understand exactly what it is that you need to do.
Right. Now, this is not a Veterans Administration project.
No. We did this back in August of last year.
Yes, we did.
And we had about 40 ministers who came in. And for them, it was like a training session. We're not here to train the clergy. We are to inform the clergy of the matters that's going on within their congregation. It was almost like the deers in the headlights, for these clergy out there. Oh, what am I supposed to do? You can't teach the clergy how to counsel someone who has PTSD. My pastor is probably unique in that situation because he's a Vietnam veteran.
Wow.
He can stand there and he can talk to you until you're blue in the face, and he can tell you what may or may not be going on in your life. But in order to get therapeutic treatment, you're going to need a therapist. And doing that, you understand exactly where you need to go. It may be in-house treatment. You may have to see a therapist every day. Then again, you may be sent to a support group like ours. Our support group is outside of the VA system. It's an independent support system where you have other veterans, and we call it a strength-based support system. Everyone in that group knows exactly where you have been. They've been in combat. They've been in the wet rice paddies, and they can tell you exactly. Every story is different, but everyone has been there. They know exactly what you're saying.
Described it to me a little bit before the show about the post-traumatic stress separation between a veteran and just a normal public person is high, but when that veteran gets near other veterans, that you talk about the gap goes down. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. In the military, you have that uniqueness and that bond. It's a very unselfish relationship. And as long as you're around those individuals, you're under control. With the exception of some of these individuals who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, we didn't have road rage at that time. Back when the Vietnam veterans, we came back. We didn't know what road rage was.
Okay.
There at Fort Campbell, they found out that these guys were coming back from their first and second tours, and they were having fights in the middle of the interstate, because these guys are getting out of cars, shaking the fists at these individuals and having fights. We have some guys in some of the groups who had road rage, but they're learning how to contain that road rage. Being in the military, you are around these individuals all the time, so you can able to talk about it. Being out here on the road and someone cut you off, it's just like someone cutting you off in the jungle. And when they cut you off in the jungle, the next thing on your mind is, I'm going to get that son of a gun the next time he does something to one of the guys in my group. So it's a defensive mechanism.
Yeah. Okay, well, you made another statement a minute ago, and I'm going to say I feel like I'm part of getting these ministers there. You mentioned that the minister needs to identify the veteran in his congregation, or that's one thing, but are we also not trying to set it up so that the veterans will not be identified, but will identify themselves, or... Help me here. I'm not sure.
Well, how the process work is we go out and we will speak with the pastor to ask for his support.
Uh-huh.
And once we get support from the church itself, you have to have a leader. And that leader will be considered the layperson in the church. And it's up to that individual to identify the veterans in the congregation. And once those veterans are identified, that lay leader is the leader of that flock. And they, in turn, will give them the resources that's needed in order to get them into the proper places to get treatment.
So what we're going to be talking about as far as putting on this event, May 1, who are we targeting?
We're targeting primarily the pastors, within the congregation, to have them understand what is needed of these veterans in order to get treatment. We're not asking them to counsel the veterans, anything. We just ask them to be identify a leader, whereas we can identify the problems of the veterans themselves.
And the first one that we had in August, we learned that the ministers just didn't know what to do or where to go, or
they had no idea of the fact, even though they were given brochures and pamphlets, they had no idea where to go from that particular point. And we determined that we needed to find out and establish the ministry within the church. And once you identify the ministry in the church, those guys and those women, they know where to go after that. They know that, hey, I got to go see Mr. Freddie. I got to go see this person in order to get help.
So, wow. Ready? I've been talking in this hour, basically a book that y'all were kind enough to give me, When War Comes Home. Mm-hmm. It's talking about facilitating veteran-friendly congregations. What is a veteran-friendly congregation?
A veteran-friendly congregation is a congregation that understands their veterans. They understand that they are part of the congregation. They are part of the daily life of the church itself. It's amazing how many churches probably in the city that don't even know the veterans that's a part of their congregation. So until you establish that, the veteran is just like someone walking through a revolving door and you pay no attention to them. Sometimes the only attention that they get is on Veterans Day, and they tell you to stand up, and some churches don't even do that. We're trying to make a presence that's totally different.
Okay, so if I was a minister and I wanted to let people know that I was a veteran-friendly congregation,
what we do is, once you become a veteran-friendly congregation, there are certain things that you have to comply with, that you have to make sure that the congregation knows that you support the ministry, and also that you identify who these veterans are. And once that's did, we will come out and we will talk to you and find out exactly what it is that needs to be did. But that's, you have to have a leader. You have to have a leader of these men. No, we can't come out and talk to you as an individual and the individual veterans have not been identified. That's just compounds the problem itself, because you have to know who these individuals are. We can't come into your congregation and ask someone to raise their hand. Mm-hmm. No, you have to identify these individuals yourself.
So the event that we've got scheduled for May 1, what exactly are we attempting to do there? You know, when we go out and we're inviting all ministers to come, we have 162 seats, I understand, mm-hmm. which I'll be honest with you folks out there, I'm committed to about 25% of those, and I'm going to have them. We want you there. If you're listening and you're going to see your minister today, you know, you might want to tell him that we're going to be in touch with him and ask him to send somebody. And if they send somebody, what is that person that we want to come? Who is that person?
That can be any person in the congregation. It doesn't really have to be the pastor itself. It can be a lay person who is a representative of the pastor itself. But what we want to find out from that individual is whether or not they would be willing to adhere to the practices of being a veteran-friendly congregation. And we have outlined some of those things that the individual congregation would be a part of. One of those things is to publicize that you are a veteran-friendly congregation. One of the other things is that you identify the veterans in your congregation. And once you do that and identify the leader of the congregation, we can go from there as far as helping the pastor itself. The person that attend the forum itself, as I said, can be any individual there in the congregation. It doesn't specifically have to be the pastor, but we would love to see the pastor and talk to them face to face. Because what we're going to do after that, after we finish talking, is we're going to ask the pastor to make a commitment to be a veteran-friendly congregation. And Mayor Burchett has pledged his support as far as the congregation. And I don't know exactly when the news conference is going to be. Probably in the next couple of weeks or so, that he's going to have a news conference to also publicize this event.
Mm-hmm. And we're using the word congregation and not church.
That's correct, because we've got many churches. We have many, well, put it like this here. You have many faith that doesn't adhere to the word of church. So we use in congregation to describe all of those individuals.
So that includes the Catholic priests.
Catholic priests, the mosque and okay. the synagogues and all of those individuals.
Right. And even the little church on the...
Little church
on the hill, the independent, non-denominational congregation. You know, they probably have a veteran in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And our motto, I think, is our congregation can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not our church can.
No, it's congregation can.
We're setting it up so that those people can come and, you said, not learn, but be informed.
Informed.
Of the services that we as a group can offer.
Offered. That's correct.
Okay. And the end result of that is that they will become aware and have the ability to network
to network and get the support that's needed for the veterans in the congregation.
So if minister identifies or if a member of the congregation volunteers themselves and says, hey, this is who I am, you know, can you get me the information I need to help me solve the problem I have?
We can, as I said, that individual in the congregation will be the leader. But if they don't have a leader in the congregation, that person can still go to our website.
Okay. And what is that?
They can still go to our website at tnvhc.org, and they can leave a message, and it will come directly to either myself or any other individual that's on the committee. And we can give you the resources that you can get in order to get help.
So families with veterans out there, or veterans, if they're sitting there and going, you know, I think that they have been talking about me this hour. Is that not right?
That's correct.
There is a way to go to other veterans who have felt the same things, experienced the same things, but who have the knowledge and the experience of how to take the initial steps mm-hmm. to solve the problem. And to do that, they can go to tnvhc.org.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be in touch with Freddie Owens or Ed Ginott or any of the other members that we have. Freddie, you got a few more seconds here to wrap up. Anything you want to say?
What I'd like to say is if you're out there listening this morning, whether you are a pastor or whether or not you're a veteran, this will be the opportunity of a lifetime to share with your family and other members of your congregation and seeking help and getting them to understand exactly what the veterans are all about and become a part of one of the greatest support groups that you ever have in the city.
What's it cost them?
It don't cost you anything.
It's free. All right. We want to thank Freddie Owens for coming and talking to us this hour. Freddie, thank you very much.
You're welcome.